The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
I'm Alyssa.
And I'm John.
We're from Raleigh, North Carolina.
And we love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
Hi, I'm Terry Joe from Orlando. I just ran my first marathon, the New York City Marathon, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
I'm April Arnold from Columbia, Maryland, and I love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
Hi, I'm Rebecca from Massachusetts, and I listen to Mike, Michelle, and Chris Eliopoulos on the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 536 of the Mickey Miles and More Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and with me on today's show is the one and the only Chris Eliopoulos. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Mike, got my 16 in today, and along that song, I set myself up on my running playlist.
Yeah.
And I include Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley, so I was actually Rickrolled during my race today.
Wow.
So, I don't know if you know what Rickrolled is.
I don't know what Rickrolled is. I know it's in every YouTube video. What is
right.
Rickrolled?
So basically, like, that you would click on a link and, you know, saying, here's how you can save $50,000 on your next, you know, tax payment.
Oh,
and then you click on the
called.
Link, and then... And then you get the video for Never Gonna Give You Up, and it's like, that's the running joke. So he's been on doing things like... He did, I think he did for the Sesame Street float in Thanksgiving Day Parade one time. He
but why would you listen to that on purpose?
I found it funny. It lifted me up. I felt, like, excited that it just... I got Rickrolled by myself. Look, I'm a weird guy. I'm in my head a lot. Just leave me alone. Mike, who's badgering me. I don't know what the problem is.
I think the person who's badgering you, Chris, is none other than Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean. What did you do today, Michelle? Did you run this weekend? Did you do your training?
I did my following the Jeff Galloway program, and I did my 8.5 mile walk on Friday. And I also did my, I did not do the 20 mile prescribed run. I did 18. Yes. It was actually a glorious day yesterday in New England, and it was perfect running day.
I also recall you told me that you did something different yesterday when you ran. You used some technology that you had not used before, right?
Yeah, well, I've been using it. It is my new Apple Watch Series 3, and I think... one of our Mickey Milers, Amy Chase, was asking me to talk about it on the show. But the cool thing was that they just did the update, watchOS 4.1, where you can actually play the radio or play any song that you want on your watch. So I have myself a pair of earbuds, and I went on my walk, my 8 mile walk on Friday, and I was messing around with it. I was listening to NPR, I was listening to different playlists that I had, and really it worked flawlessly. I could hear anything whenever I wanted to. It was just some people looking out of their windows just saw some strange lady in the neighborhood punching on her watch a lot. But the earbuds and the watch worked absolutely fine. It was great. And then I charged everything up for my 18-mile run on Saturday, and it was actually great then too, but something happened right around 13.1 miles. So right around the half marathon stage, the watch just said, "Oh, we're done." And it went into low power mode.
Wow.
And so, yeah, so that was like, you know.
And it was fully charged when you started?
Yeah, I was doing the slow pace because it was a long run. So it was about, I don't know, like a slower pace than I had done, you know, for my PR. So that was about 2 hours and 45 minutes. I hit 13.1. Oh, and yeah, I mean, I had been listening to the radio and doing the streaming. The earbuds were fine. They went the whole time. But I had my Garmin on at the same time just in case, and I was. It's been so close in terms of tracking mileage that I thought maybe I'm not going to use my Garmin anymore. But I know, at least with this new Apple Watch, that a half marathon is the max. I did have one person call me. I left the phone behind. The phone was in the car. I had one person call me, as they had the day before. I had like a 25-minute phone call on my walk, which went really well. And I had a wrong number out on the rail trail, but it ended up dying. So, yeah, so it worked great. It's just the battery when you're doing the LTE and you're streaming the music off of your watch. It's not going to take you through anything longer than a half marathon.
But if you went for the full marathon, well, you didn't do this yet, but the full marathon or a longer run with the music coming off of your phone, do you think it will still last? Or
So then it's, from what I read online, it's the streaming off the watch that drains the battery.
Drains it. Okay.
Yeah, because I've had it for a few weeks and I've never had a problem.
How long does it last usually during the day for you? Does it go
the whole
day?
Day. Yep. Mm-hmm. And okay. even when I took it on my 8 mile, you know, because when I have short legs, so when I'm walking 8 miles, it takes me a long time to walk. So it was a good 2 hour walk. It still had like, I don't know, 75%, and I was it was using it that whole time. But yeah, it was kind of disappointing. I mean, I still love it. I really still love the watch. I'm not going to throw away my Garmin for those longer runs. But it is great not running with the phone. I have to say it's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So
it's recommended.
I like it, but you know, I'm an Apple geek. I'm getting my new phone tomorrow. So
very nice.
But anyway, I wanted to give a shout out before we move on to, somebody who did one of our Mickey Milers, Rachel Opatowski, who did the New York City Marathon today. So congratulations. Yay. And also shout out, I know she doesn't listen to the show, but Shailene Flanagan from Marblehead, Massachusetts, won the marathon for the women. Woohoo!
And hey, and shout out to my niece, Elizabeth, who actually ran today. Finished in 4.5 hours. Great job.
That's awesome. That's cool. She's been at the Disney events, right?
Yeah, you remember her. She ran with us. Yep.
Yeah, nice.
She's great.
Awesome.
So I'm going to turn the show over to Mr. Iliopoulos because he is going to grace us with an introduction to our special guest. So, Chris, take it away.
So the other day, Michelle gave us sent us a link to a Reddit AMA with a gentleman named Brandon Huff. And we reached out to talk to him because we found out that he worked behind the scenes at the Run Disney on the West Coast. Right now, he's the president owner of the Advanced Running Project, which is a grassroots running business dedicated to introducing more people to running and encouraging those who run to run more and run faster. They put on events that deliver exceptional value to participants, blah, blah, blah. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But we really wanted to talk to him about what he did behind the scenes at these Run Disney events. So welcome, Brandon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you. We're so excited. The reason we wanted to get in touch with you is no controversy. It's just about the fact that you were the guy that did a lot of the behind the scenes stuff. Like, you set course design. You got a certification for courses. You got supplies and stuff like that. Is that correct?
That is correct. That was my day-to-day job for about 20 events down in Southern California, and specifically 4 of those events were for Run Disney on the West Coast.
So what was the purview of what you did? You were just like the jack of all trades there, getting everything set up?
Definitely a little bit of everything. So behind the scenes, you know, race planning starts anywhere from 6 to 12 months out, just depending on what we've got to do. And starting from that point, my main job was to initially design a course that worked for all the key Disney partners on the resort, and then design a course that worked for our city partners, and make a course that was good for the Caltrans, the highways, and just think of all the partners that could be impacted. And then once we had a course, from there, my role was to get the permits, get the police on board, get the traffic control plans approved by the city, work with our traffic control team about how we were going to set the course, timelines, water station supplies, you know, from cups to water, looking at heat and how that was going to impact our supply numbers, all those kind of things. And then making sure that on race day, as the race progressed and got closer, making sure the race day timelines were real tight knit, and making sure that when the gun went off, the first runner had a clear path for 13.1 miles or 10K or 5K, depending on the day, and then making sure it was good through the last runner, and then cleaning it all up.
Wow. So you actually had to take out literally take out a map and measure out where this race would go?
Yeah. Typically it would start with just like a general idea. We would say, you know, like say for the new courses for like superheroes, we said, you know, we want to kind of go, actually, let's just use Star Wars. Star Wars is a little easier. We said we want to go south this time and we want to go into Garden Grove. And so we're like, what could a Garden Grove course look like? And then so you kind of loosely come up with an idea and you go, well, we did a loop around downtown Garden Grove, that gives us, you know, 7 miles. And we're like, okay, we can find 5 miles in the park and or 6 miles in the park. And so we just go from there.
Wow. So you had to decide how much like would be in the parks and how much would be outside, or is that dictated to you by the actual course itself and how much space you had to run?
It's a bit of both. You know, I think ideally we want to give customers the most in park time that we can. We don't want to sit there and minimize the experience. We know people come to these races because they're unique and they want to see Disney and they want to see behind this backstage and they want to run in both resorts. And so my goal is always to provide a course that maximized that Disneyland resort experience, but simultaneously connected the dots through the city. So sometimes the city course, you know, to get over to say Angel Stadium, the routes over there would dictate that that's 8 miles. And then so that would impact how many miles you had in the resort. And I think we saw that firsthand in the initial Superheroes course, because the route we went through Christ Cathedral and onto the river trail was pretty long. And so it minimized how much time we had in the resort. And thankfully in future installments of the race, we were able to add more park time while simultaneously still giving people the Anaheim Angels experience.
This is so fascinating. I'm like, as you're speaking, I'm thinking of 10 other questions to ask you, but the first one is I don't think any of us really comprehend. I mean, you're telling us all these different pieces that have to be put into play, but how much in advance do you start the planning? Because we start as runners start signing up months and months before the races are offered, but how far in advance did you start the whole process?
I specifically with a Disney event, just use a major city event. I mean, it's a full year process. You know, not everything happens when, say, an event like Disneyland half ends. It's not like the next day we wake up saying we need to start for next year. But there are definitely things you automatically start doing. So I'd say your real window is about 9 to 12 months out. And then really by about 6 months out, you're really starting to say, okay, we've got to focus. We've got this race in 6 months. So 9 to 12 months out, that's when you're looking at things like registration, and just getting all that up, initial marketing. And then since it's, you know, since it's an annual event and it's rather cyclical, you know, some things are just easy and you just have to make the most minor modifications. But when you're starting a brand new event, or there's major changes on the horizon, definitely a full 12-month cycle.
Wow. Interesting.
Neat.
Okay, let's see if I can give Brandon a really interesting question. When you're putting a course together through Disneyland and California Adventure, are there certain areas within the parks that you are trying to avoid?
You know, the the first thing that you always have to avoid is construction in closed areas. Like, for example, for most of my time with Spectrum Sports and working on the Run Disney events, I was never able to utilize the northwest side of Disneyland due to the creation of Star Wars Land that was being actively created. Mm-hmm. And so that always hurt. That hurt the course design. For those who are familiar with Run Disney events before probably 2014, you're used to running back there and kind of coming out what we called the Indy Gate over by Indiana Jones. And
yep.
We haven't used that in a few years. But for most of the rest of the park, unless it like there was some specific piece that was under construction, you know, we had pretty free rein. And mostly the limiting factor was, is this area wide enough to handle the volume of runners. And so with that, we started having course crowding issues, and we actively worked to mitigate those. And I think the clearest example that comes to mind is for people who did some of the older races, say before 2015, you might remember we used to run behind a building called H5 Costuming in Disneyland Resort. And it was behind a building with a gate to the other side, a big fence. And it always created a pinch point. And so we ultimately scrapped that. And I actively tried to never run down that alley, which was a shame because I really enjoyed running down it. But it was not for the benefit of the participants. So outside of pinch points and things that might have hampered the user experience, I had pretty free rein in designing courses around the park.
Can I ask, I never fully understood the hierarchy of the whole thing. So Run Disney hires Spectrum, which then organizes the entire race. Is that correct?
I wouldn't say we organize the entire race. I think the Run Disney model is similar to most people might think of the Boston Marathon. The Boston Marathon has its own race director, operations director, and has its entire team that manages a lot of the event, just like Run Disney does. But Run Boston uses a company called Dave McGillery Sports Enterprises, I think it is, DMSE. And so most people...
He's the race director.
Yeah, everyone looks at Dave McGillery and they go, that's the race director, just like Mike Bone from Spectrum Sports is the race director for Run Disney. But that's a third party. But Boston Marathon still has the BAA, the Boston Athletic Association. And that's how it is for Run Disney. They have a team on the West Coast and a team on the East Coast. And Spectrum Sports assists them in producing aspects of the event, most notably most of the operations. So anything that deals with the cities, the permitting process, they're heavily involved. Course design and setup, they help. The staging of the start and finish line, the corrals, the post-race area, a lot of that is what we would handle. But they have teams that internally handle a lion's share, I'd say, of the work, because with a Run Disney event, it's an incredible scale of how much needs to get done. So they have their own full-time staff that are working year-round, and then we supplement.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And it will get even more interesting as we will continue with our discussion with Brandon Huff on the next episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. So for Brandon Huff, for Chris Iliopoulos, and for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road and in the parks.
The Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at mei-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. If you would like to support the podcast, please go to mickeymiles.podbean.com and click the green Become a Patron button in the upper right-hand corner of the menu bar. We thank you for your support. Don't forget, our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/MickeyMilesPodcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/MickeyMilesPod. Last of all, don't forget, if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com, and we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.